All right, welcome back to Become a Calm Mama. I'm your host, I'm Darlene Childress. And today we're going to talk about having a difficult ex. And I've invited Lisa Johnson to speak about this. And she's the co-founder of Been There, Got Out, which is a high conflict divorce coaching program. And she's also a certified domestic violence advocate. So Lisa will introduce herself. But before we even get into it, I wanted to tell the audience, a couple of weeks ago, I had on Maggie Reyes, and she talked a lot about how to be in a relationship, right? How to handle being in a marriage, essentially. And I think it's really great to talk about, like, how do marriages end and how do you handle it? And like, what are the strategies? And so that's why I'm really excited to have Lisa here. So welcome, Lisa.
Thank you.
Yeah. Please tell us a little bit about your work and like your story, because I think it's so powerful. And then we'll get into some of the like strategies and topics.
Okay. Yeah. So with Been There, Got Out, I always say I'm the female half and my partner, Chris, who was also my romantic partner for 9 years, is the male half. And we help people dealing with really difficult relationships, getting out of them at least, high conflict separations and divorce, custody battles, and co-parenting hell generally, so that they can have the best outcome in family court and beyond. And so ours are the cases where that go on for years, and you know, the anger doesn't subside and it costs tons of money and the kids are stuck in the middle, even though it's only one parent who's generally causing the chaos. And it can feel really alone and isolating.
Yeah.
And so, we do one-on-one coaching, well, two-on-one, because it's Chris and I usually. And we also have a weekly legal abuse support group where we talk about strategies in dealing with this going through and out of the court system. But also the big issue seems to be, which was my hugest issue, how are my kids going to be okay? How are my kids going to be okay with a parent like that? And how do I co-parent with someone who doesn't seem to really care about what's best for the kids or even about the kids at all sometimes?
Right. They're just in their own need and their own like need for power or winning or whatever it is, or like the money, or they just want what they want and it's not
control.
Yeah. Control. Right. And the kids are either used as pawns, or if they've decided they're not necessary, maybe they don't even considered part of the process. Yeah. And right. That the parent who's connected and is, you know, staying in the parenting experience, is committed to the children, probably feels a lot of tension around that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So I was married for almost 18 years and I was with my ex for 20 and we have two kids. And I did not understand. I didn't even know what domestic abuse or domestic violence is. And I'm, like you said, I think I'm a state certified domestic violence advocate. And many people who are in these relationships don't even realize what's going on. So it was only toward the end, when it started getting more painful to stay than to go, that I ever considered getting out, because we didn't fight often. You know, I later found out he had a completely double life and that was part of why it was time to go. But we had these two kids, and my ex, part of how he kept me in the relationship for longer was making it sound like if I left that relationship, then I would be responsible for breaking up an intact family, and that I would be blamed for destroying these kids' lives. And I internalized that. And so did everything that could possibly have been done to try to keep it together. And in those last couple of years, it was physically painful to stay. I mean, it was so difficult. And anyone listening who is going through this now, it doesn't stay this way. But I know I remember feeling like a physical ball of pain in my stomach every single day and feeling like, oh my gosh, if I could just get rid of this. But at the same time, wishing that I'd do anything to keep it together. And it was only after finally taking the leap and saying, it's not working. Like, one person can't make both people better, that things started getting improving. But it was a process. And now I'm speaking on the other side of it. And I can say that I've never been happier in my life. I found the love of my life. My kids are fine. You know, I've got this amazing career. People say I've turned my mess into my message. And so I love being able to talk to people who are going through it and being able to offer a lot of comfort as well as strategic, actionable advice to get them through it and get them to the other side as well.
Wow. What strength it took to make that decision, like that ball of pain, as you describe, like in your stomach, and it's just this terrible tightness. It's just probably fear and anxiety and just this awful, like, confusion. And then you make that decision. It sounds like over time that lessens and you feel it's replaced with what, do you think?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're the feelings queen. You're the emotional translator. I was thinking of the word trepidation, but the immediate feeling, you know, I remember the conversation after 2 years of just like confusion and hope and doubt and everything, disappointment. But I remember that particular conversation when something just clicked and I said, you know what, to my ex, like, I think I'm realizing that you and I just want completely different things. Like, I'm doing everything to keep our family together and you just want to be happy and do what you want to do. And it's just not going to work. So tomorrow I'm ready. I'm going to be okay. I don't know what's going to happen with the kids, but that's it. And with that decision, it was like such relief of just letting go already. Like, I can't keep controlling, like, I give up. And then that, it felt like so freeing. Mm-hmm. And then of course, you know, it's a roller coaster, as we know.
Yes. That's what I'm going to talk about a little
really
bit.
Hard. Yeah. Really hard, but just that relief. And literally as soon as he went out, the air in the house felt different. It felt like this weight had lifted. The kids sensed it. We have thousands of people that we've talked to who've experienced that similar feeling of like a physical lifting after that person's presence is away. I mean, of course, you know, what Chris and I deal with is a lot of post-separation abuse, but wow, just your physical living space really does change.
Yeah. It's so cool because you said, I give up. And I kept thinking, you give up the pain, you give up the struggle, you give up the control, and it's replaced by peace and relief. And like, what are you giving into? You know, where are you going? I think, okay, I'm done. But what you're offering is that there's another side. Like, you release that pain and that trepidation and you take the leap, and there is so much goodness on the other side and pain for sure.
Right.
It's not the absence of it, but then I would imagine the hope of a future starts to take place, right?
Well, first it was just relief. I didn't even know what I
You're offering hope for all of us, because you're like you're like, yeah, okay, I'm real, you know, felt that relief, and then you're saying, and it just got better and better.
Well, also another, since you know, I love talking about emotions now, like thinking about it, like it was just this enormous sense of freedom. And many of our clients are in relationships that involve something called coercive control, which is a crime of liberty, because their freedom has been taken away in so many different methods, like the financial abuse, where they haven't had control of the money. They don't understand that. There's been verbal or psychological or sexual or, you know, legal abuse. There's isolation, stalking, and to let it go and to be like, wow, I can start making decisions for myself when it's been so long since I've realized that I haven't been making decisions. It's really powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Finding your own voice after a really long time.
Right. Finding your center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like really kind of tuning in quite a bit. And I think it's so interesting. You said, you know, I'm going to be okay. I don't know about the kids. Like at a certain point you were like, I am going to go take care of myself and we're going to figure out the rest. Not in any form of abandonment, just like, in order to survive, I have to go and I will figure out what to do with my kids later. And in the process that I teach for my listeners, they know it's like calm comes before connect. And we do have to, we cannot offer what we don't have. We cannot help our kids when we're in pain. And, you know, of course we want to move through that pain so we can help our kids. And sometimes it takes time and whatever, that's fine. But yeah, we have to sometimes choose ourselves, and that can feel so wrong as a mom, especially. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing too was the guilt. Like at some point, you know, when you're dealing with someone who's got I'll just say issues, you know, you can get consumed by them. And I was spending sometimes 6 hours a day trying to talk to my husband. We'd go down to the basement and it was like, I kept trying to convince him that he was delusional and in denial and like what would happen and what this really meant. And I was getting exhausted. And the whole time it was like, I'm not paying attention to these kids. Like, I didn't even know what was going on, but I was just like, so confused.
Yeah, consumed. Yeah.
And, yeah. Consumed too. And I just felt like I have to take care of these kids. Like, I cannot go on like this. I mean, that 6 hours a day didn't last for that long, but there were moments, and looking back, it's like, I was doing completely the wrong thing, but you kind of,
you
have
don't
to
know.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why we have guides that come up alongside of us. That's why we're coaches. That's why we have mentors, because there's things we don't know how to do. I always say that in parenting. It's like, why would you know how to set a limit or how to teach a kid to potty train? Like, I don't know. There's no reason that you would know that. Unless
That's the same thing with our clients who are like, I didn't understand as I was going through the courses. I'm like, how would you know who's done this before?
Right. Why would you anticipate that you'd ever have to become an expert on, you know, like you said, you had helped a law be passed in Connecticut around coercive control and identifying that as part of the Domestic Violence Acts. And it's like, you didn't set out to become an expert on coercive control.
I know. I never was like a little girl dreaming, oh, I want to be a high conflict divorce strategist when I get older.
No, right. Yeah. I do think, you know, sometimes I've noticed when someone gets divorced, like if they're in a social group and they're saying, oh, we're getting divorced, and people go, oh, I'm so sorry. And I think the person who made that decision is only in joy and relief. Like it's like the 2 years prior is when they really maybe needed the, I'm so sorry you're going through this hard decision. But once the decision's made, you're like, oh no, it's better now.
I know.
The hope. Yeah.
That's exactly it. I mean, for 2 years, I only told three friends, and they did the best they could, but I wasn't getting good advice from them because they also didn't quite understand. But I didn't want to tell anybody in my family because I kept thinking, if people find out what's going on, they're going to hate him forever. And I kept trying to reconcile. So I just was like, I'm going to have to keep this hidden until I'm like really, really sure. And so it is like, there's all this secrecy and shame around what's happening. And by the time I said I'm getting divorced, and people are like, oh, and I'm like, no, I am like really glad. And people still will say to me, I'm so sorry you've been through all this, like hundreds, you know, 100 court appearances and all this money. I'm like, no, I'm really glad that this, I mean, I wouldn't wish it on someone, but if that hadn't happened, then I wouldn't have this amazing life.
Yeah, right. It's so true. Like, we have to go through these hard things sometimes in order to get the next thing. And that's true of like children. It's like, how do they become resilient? How do they grow up? How do they learn things? It's like through obstacles. It's through overcoming obstacles. It's from learning how to handle those things. And so it's like, you're a prime example of that. You're like, I went through something really, really hard, and now I'm who I am because of it.
Yeah. I mean, and that's something like I mentioned earlier, like I was so worried about my kids not being okay. Mm-hmm. And they are okay, but it took a lot of work. But my son was on a podcast. He's a young adult now. He's 24. So he can, you know, it's been years that he can talk freely, but he was asked like, what helped you as a child, or he was a teenager at the time, what helped you get through it? Well, and he said, my mom kept it together. And he didn't, and I didn't know he was going to say that, but I didn't realize I was getting support through that time period. And my partner, Chris, you know, I met shortly after finally getting my ex. I felt like my marriage had been over for more than 2 years, and we met, and we didn't realize that we were both going through something similar. And then my dad helped me with a lot. I did have some good friends. I had a wonderful divorce attorney. I joined Al-Anon, which I didn't understand what it, I thought I was dealing with one thing, but it was actually helping with like a few things.
Yeah. We've talked about Al-Anon is for codependency, and I've talked about on the podcast, codependency and parenting. I did an episode on that, how it shows up. When we are in a codependent relationship with our kids, like even when they're little. So,
Interesting.
Yeah. If anyone's curious, they can go back in the archive and look for that. But yeah, so Al-Anon, if you're dealing with anybody, any relationship struggle where you're not sure where you begin and they end, that's a good, Al-Anon is a great place for that. For sure.
Oh my gosh. Al-Anon was so helpful in teaching me emotional detachment. Mm-hmm. I was consumed, like we said, with what was going on. And I remember going to a meeting in the front and all these people were like so happy. And I thought, this is crazy. I'm crying and being like, I don't know what to tell my kids about, you know, this divorce and everything. And they just gave me excellent advice. And over just a couple months, I got so much better.
Oh, so that's so good. So yeah. This, I wanted to talk about like some strategies that you learned along the way dealing with your ex, because it's like getting to the point where you end the relationship is great, like powerful for you. But then they're not gone.
No.
And the people that you work with, right? The parents are still around. They are wanting to have their own set of rules and boundaries. They're wanting to have, I don't know. You tell me, like, what are some of the issues that come up when it's over, because we're talking about a difficult ex. So sometimes people separate, still painful, whatever, and they get to the point and then they figure it out together.
They're not our people.
No, because then there's a lot of hurt feelings, want to get the control back. There's, you know, issues that come up if the other person doesn't handle it maturely.
Yeah.
Right.
Mature isn't even a word that enters our realm.
How would you describe it? Let's go for it.
Yeah. So, okay. So we often think about how, you know, because our clients are all dealing with some type of domestic abuse and it's always emotional on top of other things. Mm-hmm. But that other person, like when the relationship ends and you are in different living spaces, the abusive party is limited in the ways they can still get at you because they don't have that day-to-day interaction. So I always say that they're limited to three main things. It's money, kids, and the court. And so money and the court go hand in hand, and that's legal abuse, which Chris and I specialize in, but kids last the longest and are the most painful. And so often when a couple separates and there's children involved, the kids will be put into something called a loyalty conflict by one of usually the abusive parent, because that parent, it's always like everything's about winning and losing. And so they feel like the best way to often punish that other parent is to take the kid. They want to take everything, actually. Like one mm-hmm. of the lines that comes up is like, I'm going to make you poor and I'm taking the kids too.
Yeah. So I'm going to take all your money and your children and all your time with the court system.
Right. Right. So, and it we have male and female clients and we see it go various directions. But legal abuse is definitely something that's like 50-50, like people lie all the time in court. We interview attorneys constantly and they're like, no, it's not like a male female thing in the court system. Both of them do it. So that's awful. But back to the kids, it's the same thing, but both women and men do it. So the thing that's interesting is it often starts before the relationship even ends. Mm. So I think back to my own relationship with my ex and how he would very subtly undermine things that I was doing. Like, for example, my son, he was always like a very strong-willed child and he would test a lot. And so, you know, I try to, and I'm a background as a teacher, so I'd like discipline him and not punish, but I'd be like, no, you know, you have to stop and you need to like do whatever, you know, and I'd make him sit out or whatever it was I make him do. But his father would constantly come in and be like, oh, Izzy, you don't have to, like, you don't have to listen to mom. She's just cranky. You can do something and like take it back. Mm-hmm. So I'd be like, no. Like we need to address what he did. And, but my ex-husband would be like, no, you can take it back. And that really made things awful. Not just for me with Izzy not respecting me and acting like that my parenting didn't matter and that his father was really the one in charge, but it taught my son that there were no consequences to his behavior. Mm-hmm. And he became harder to parent because he just thought, well, whatever I do, I could just say, I'm sorry. And like, I think he struggled in some ways with empathy because he learned like, it doesn't matter. It's all about like me and what I want to do. Yeah. And so we've had to work on that a bit, you know, it's been a little bit harder for him because of how he was raised with that. But thinking back, I'm like, wow, my ex was always undermining me, you know, and I just didn't know exactly that that's what was happening.
Yeah. So, and do you think that's because like the person wants to be the most liked, like they want to have the most favor with the child, like they want to be considered the favorite parent or the one is in control, but also most forgiving and most, you know, holds all the cards.
Yeah. It's the loyalty. It's like, are you going to side with me? Or are you going to go with the other parent? And for them, it's like in normal relationships, you recognize that your child loves both parents and they need both parents. But in an abusive situation, an abuser's like to a child, they're like, you're either with me or against me. Mm-hmm. And if you love me and if you want me to love you, then you need to reject or discard that other parent because that's what I did. You need to do as I do. So that child is rewarded for rejecting one parent who's often the target of the domestic violence, often the safe, healthy, protective parent, and then punished for showing affection or love to that parent. And there's all kinds of things that happen where like a child is grilled, like after they come back from the other parent's house, what did you do? What did they do? And, you know, like feeding information. There's all kinds of ways that that abusive parent will affect the child. Like one of the way, and this is actually the topic I think I told you of the book that we're working on now. It's our second book about how to handle when your toxic ex is trying to brainwash the kids against you in court and in life. And one of the most common things that they do is they send poisonous messages about the other parent to the child. And it's not overtly necessarily, but I call it the three U's. It's like they want the child to believe that that other parent is unsafe, unloving, or unavailable. So let's say that you, once you get out of the relationship, let's say you're the target parent, like the, you know, the healthier parent, you get in a new relationship, your ex is going to say, see how you, the other parent, you don't care about the child. Like your mom, let's say it's me, your mom doesn't care about you because look how busy she is with her boyfriend and his family. And she loves his kids more than you.
Yeah.
So she doesn't really love you, but I do because look, I'm not the one in another relationship. However, let's say my ex, for example, was in a relationship and I was single, then it would be like, oh, see, your mother's unworthy of love. Like she can't find anyone.
Yeah. Twisting it either direction to point. I keep thinking the phrase poison the well.
Poison the well is perfect. I interviewed Dr. Christopher Willard, who's a Harvard psychologist, and he used that term as also poison.
Yeah. I just think poisoning the well. Right. And this is one of the things we talked about on your podcast of like, if we as the parent really go into that perspective of, no matter what, you can't poison this well because I've built this well. Like this well, I make this water. I'm the one. This is my spring that this well is replenished with. And holding that and owning that, like you can try, but I know that my relationship with my kid is strong. Yeah. I can continue to tell my child how much I love them and how safe they are with me. And that is enough. It's like a Jedi mind trick almost. It's like who's going to quote win my child's brain or my child's heart. And I think love in the long term and generosity and compassion wins.
Yeah.
But in the middle of it, it can probably feel so dangerous and so scary and such a rejection.
Yeah. Because often the child will absorb some of these messages and come back to the target parent and say, my other parent said this about you. And they'll be very angry and confused and lashing out. And we as parents were like, I got away from my ex and now my child is acting just like that person.
Yes.
And there's all these uncomfortable feelings of like, I want to, you know, like we get triggered by that same behavior coming through our child. That's why it's also called abuse by proxy, because we're being abused by them. And it's so complex. Like sometimes your ex may be saying things to your child, knowing that the child's going to say it to you almost to bait you to get the reaction. And then your child reports back what happened. And then they use it against you in court or whatever to make it like, see, you're an unfit parent. So it's you have to be so careful about your response. And that's why it's really important to understand, first of all, that your children are also victims of domestic violence. Like the fact that they are being subjected to this and that they're dependent. They can't, I mean, you hopefully got away. They can't. Mm-hmm. They're the ones who are stuck going back and forth. They're the ones whose lives have changed the most, really.
Right. And they are going to grow up and they're going to be able to make choices just like you did in that relationship.
Right.
Like it might take time until they decide this is not a relationship I want to be in anymore. And they may in that process, it's like holding space for the future of when your child comes online. And it's like, I'm sure your friends were like, come on, Lisa, leave him. He's not good for you. And you're like, no, we're going to work it out. Or you have reasons to stay and your children have reasons to stay. And then at some point they don't have reasons to stay and they're going to choose where the love is. They're going to go where the relationship is actually not conditional.
Yeah. It's tricky though, because often these abusive people have money. They use money.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Kids, and even like young adults and adult children will be like, I can't stand that one person, but they're paying for my car and they're paying for my college. And, you know, it's very, very difficult. A lot of times kids don't realize what's going on until they're in their 40s or they have children for them, you know, their own children. But I mean, there's ways to, you know, to find out earlier, but it can take decades for them to really understand the dynamic. And it's so hard for the other parent because you're like, how can I wait this long? But there are things you can do, certainly, in the meantime.
Well, and I think holding, like, it's easier for your child to come to realization if they have a space of understanding where you can really hold, like what you're saying, like, my child is a victim right now. And what does a victim need, right? They need agency. They need compassion. They need the ability to reflect. And when you are able to separate your fear and your pain, and that's really a huge task. I understand that as a parent, as a person, but for your child and benefit of them, it's like, yep, I know what it's like to be in a relationship with this person. I know how it feels unsafe to question anything they're saying or to, you know, act disloyal because everything is conditional. Money is conditional. Love is conditional. And holding the compassionate lens for your child and also believing in their own ability to move out of that relationship.
Yeah.
Whenever that's time, like you're just there, you're just a loving, compassionate presence.
Right. And easier said than done. Of course.
Yes, for sure.
Right. And that's why it is like one of the best things that you can do for your child is to be self-regulated. Like, and that's exactly, darling, what you do with parents is you help them self-regulate. You help them stay calm, because if we're not calm, we can't co-regulate with our children and help them process their own emotions and experience the world in a productive way. So, so we have to be self-regulated. And the thing that comes up a lot, like, when kids come from that other home and they're so angry and they're saying things to us and triggering us, that are, it's human nature to want to defend ourselves and set the record straight, just like we did in the relationship, because we're getting blamed for things that aren't our fault and it's not fair. But that's actually a big mistake to do that, because often the child comes home, or even let's say a teenager. Teenager hears a certain message, they come back and they start yelling at you and questioning you, you know, and then so they've been told something, clearly it's upsetting them, and they're coming to you with it. If you come back by saying that's not true, and then you try to correct the record, which is again what we all want to do, you're basically doing the same behavior as the abusive person, because you're telling them what to think.
Yeah.
Kids, teenagers, we all trust authorities. We think they're telling us the truth. Kids think that their both parents are telling them the truth, so they don't know who's lying. But if one parent says this about this happened, and then the other parent says no, you're also insulting the child's intelligence, especially a teenager, because they're thinking you're making me feel like I can't decide things for myself. Like, you're not giving me any space. Nobody's listening to what I think or letting me question anything or feel anything. It's all about, you need to think this. No, you need to think that. Mm-hmm. And my background is as a high school English teacher. And one of the things that I felt was a really strong priority for my students was to teach them critical thinking skills. And I think as parents and as people, we also really need to help kids in general, but kids specifically in these situations develop very strong critical thinking skills. So they don't just take in what one person says, and it can help them, like it would help anybody actually in our society, process the world. Like, what's this? Like, who's saying this? Why are they saying it? What's the message that they want me to think? Why do they want me to think this?
And all of those are questions, right? They're like open-ended questions of curiosity and inquiry that you're offering. And that is why we want to be as neutral as possible. That's why we want to be calm, so that we can then guide our child to think about things like, could that be true? Is there another way to view this? What do you think?
Exactly. The what do you think? Why do you think that way? Why would you, how did you come to that perspective? Mm-hmm. And to do it not just in these really emotional moments, but as an English teacher, I was constantly like writing lesson plans, because when I'd go out and I'd see a movie, I'd be like, oh, I can teach this movie. I'd love to hear what my students mm-hmm. have to say about it. You know, so sometimes, you know, you could read a book together with your child, like you read the same book and then talk about it, or you watch a movie together that's mm-hmm. provocative and talk about it. Talk about a situation with a friend that you had when you were younger. Kids love minded. And my students did. They love to hear about what you were like when you were younger and mm-hmm. how you dealt with a situation, or even as an adult, like adult friendships. How did I work through something? Because you're also modeling for them ways that they might be able to handle something. Or what would you have done if you were me? You're showing them respect for their opinion. Mm-hmm. You're encouraging them to use that muscle of like critical thinking, making them say why they would do something like that. And again, not just relating it to their other parent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, because that's not really helpful, because again, a lot of kids do feel torn. So there's so many other things to talk about.
Yes.
And we always
I talk about raising teens, especially, it's like curiosity conversations and casual conversations, because we spend so much time just talking about, like, not necessarily the other parent, but, well, how much homework do you have? And did you clean your room? And have you taken out the trash? And it's like, it sucks up all the bandwidth for the actual relational stuff. And if you're hyper focused on your ex and their relationship with their child, you're not really allowing your relationship with your child to blossom and bloom in these other areas outside of your ex, right?
Right. And also sometimes we think like that just because what we're experiencing, like the way that what we're experiencing is what our child is experiencing. So we're experiencing, like in our community, we're experiencing so much pain because of what's going on with the relationship, and it is so consuming. But our kids often, they just want to live their lives. Like, they don't care. They want to be kids. They want to be teens. They want to be with their friends, go to their parties, do their sports and other activities.
Yeah. No, they're definitely in their own world. Yeah.
Right. And it's good for them to do that. And so often sometimes you try to remember, like, they are not seeing the world the way you are. And just because I know sometimes my heart would be broken more for my kids, because I would think, oh, they must be feeling this because I'm watching them. And if I were in that situation, but it's not the same thing. You know,
right.
It's really like, if they want to talk to us, that's fine. But it's hard. It's hard to me being somewhat codependent too. It's hard for me to set. It was really hard for me to separate from what they might be feeling, you know?
Yeah. Which is why it's so great. Like, you know, the connection tool that I teach is to ask a question. Like, I wonder if you're feeling overwhelmed. And they're like, no, this is fun. I'm great. I like managing all this stuff. Like, I love being busy all day. And you're like, oh, cool. Okay. Like, I'm just asking. And then they're like, the whole idea of critical thinking and any of it, it's just really awareness, right? Self-awareness, building up our own identity within. And if you want to like inoculate your kids against being susceptible to sort of any domestic violence experience, I would imagine it would be about their own identity, building that really strong within their own voice and their own, you know, guidance and their own like antenna and flags and all of that to build within them. And that comes through inquiry and questions and awareness. And
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I had to learn in my 40s was to pause and pay attention to my gut and to not when I was in the midst of like a PTSD moment, because there like you can't trust your gut. Your amygdala is all worn out and, everything is discombobulated. But to really pause and be like, how do I feel at this moment?
Yeah.
And I remember after my first date with my partner, Chris, I sat in the car and I was like, how do I feel? Like, I felt so stupid. I was like, how do I feel? That was fun. Like, I had fun. That was a good time.
Right.
Yes, I would go out with him again. I'm not attracted to him yet, but, that was like, I had a good time. And so that's one thing that I do with my daughter in particular, because she's very like, I'm not sure. And then she often asks other people, what do you think I should do? And I'm like, okay, pause. Feel like, how do you feel? Like, what do you think? Like, you've been through something like this before. Try to remember, and to give her the skills to have faith in herself.
Yeah.
That to help her talk herself through it.
Right. And that's such a beautiful gift when you're with your kids, whether, whenever you separate, like whether they're little or they're teens or whatever, it's like knowing they're having an experience outside of you, right, with their parent. And they want to process that. We want to give them the tools to think about it critically, to evaluate how they felt, just tapping into all of that emotional literacy, that deeper understanding. And what I think about with, like, when you have an ex who really took a lot of your own brain for a long time, and then you've given, like you said, 6 hours for, several weeks where you're processing with him and, all that. It's like, how much time do you still want to spend on this person? And if you can just let them do their thing and then just be with your kid and show up in this relationship with your child, that will serve not just your relationship with your kid, but your kid, because they're growing their own intuition and their own deeper understanding.
Right. Yeah. And you can be the guide for that.
Yes. And that feels so good to know that there's somebody who's paying attention.
Who's listening.
Yeah.
Who's listening to them, because the other side is not listening.
No, because they're just in their own agenda, their own need to get whatever their needs met, need for power, need for control, need for position, whatever that is. And it's like, you have unmet needs as well as a person, but not using your child to get those needs met.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. Learning to like calm and cope within, and then getting, connecting with your kids and helping them understand, like, how do you want to think and feel about mommy or daddy or whoever? And like, they're like, what? I have the ability to decide.
Right. Because that's the other thing. Kids in these situations don't have agency in a lot of ways. So to allow them to feel something, to question, they need that.
Yes. And they need to know you're not going to be like, see, I told you.
Right.
I knew, I'm telling you, your dad's lying to you. Like, yeah, you said you can't come from your need to protect yourself or defend yourself, or, it's so difficult to like, really, that's why the support is so important that you described, like having these other places where you can process all of the stuff that's happening in your head, really. Right.
And
the fears.
This is also really significant that you do deal with these issues, because there's something called intergenerational trauma. And it's not just stored in our bodies, but it continues with our children. And we don't want our kids to do the same thing. So we have to do things differently.
Yeah.
So by taking care of yourself and working through things and developing these really strong relationships with their kids and helping them develop these skills, critical thinking skills, they won't make the same mistakes, hopefully.
Yeah.
They'll be questioning more.
Right. They're doing their own thinking and feeling. I my vision for the world is that we heal the next generation in advance.
Yeah.
So that they don't have to like unpack and recover from their childhood in their late 20s and 30s, and then finally go out and live their like full free life in their 40s. It's like, what if they could have that sort of emotional independence and confidence in their 20s? Like, what will happen if we launch emotionally healthy kids into the world. And this, I think when you have had an experience with abuse and being in a domestic violence relationship, it can feel like, oh, my kids are screwed. Or, you know, like that's, you know, you're so worried about the patterns repeating and not feeling like they're going to be okay, like you started with. And just knowing that emotional coaching, being neutral, being that loving soundboard for them, and healing on your own will heal your kids.
Yeah. I mean, we often say to our clients that even though it's terrible that the kids are in a situation like this, it's actually this amazing opportunity, because kids, and I've seen it with my own kids, and I've seen it in a lot of other people in the situation with their kids, they learn to develop extraordinary social and emotional intelligence. They learn at a younger age how to establish boundaries, because often they have to learn to do it with the hardest person, a parent. And so they are far ahead of their peers in terms of, if you teach them properly, like having this amazing, these skills that they can go out into the world with. So even though it's sad that they had to be put in this situation, they really are remarkable in terms of the resilience that they have the opportunity to develop. And again, like the way they'll be able to navigate more effectively with not just a toxic parent, but the world, because there's going to be a lot of other people, a lot of difficult people they'll have to deal with, but they will have the knowledge from having this unfortunate opportunity.
Right. If you can set boundaries and emotionally coach yourself when you have a toxic parent, you could pretty much go anywhere, do anything.
Yeah.
So the skills that you teach your kids, sounds like, is like, you know, that's the pathway to amazing things, amazing opportunities for them. Yeah. So anyone out there listening who's like, you know, I want to leave. I know I'm in a toxic relationship. I'm terrified for my children. They can bank this episode and just be like, nope. Okay. It's worth it. It's going to be okay. We can figure it out. And then if they are in that place and they're like, well, I want Lisa in my corner, how do they find you? What do they do? How do they get this kind of support while they're leaving?
No, super easy. Just type been there, got out, like anywhere, and you'll find us. We're on Instagram, YouTube. We have the podcast. Our book is on Amazon, our first book. I mean, we're TikTok, Pinterest, I think, like X, everywhere. And our website is beentheregotout.com. You can just write to us at lisa@beentheregotout.com, or Chris is the male half. Chris@beentheregotout.com. You could write to both of us. We always answer. I do all the social media myself. I answer everything. I mean, who knows? Because it's like humongous that I won't have time. But yeah, it's just the two of us. We're real people. And just get in touch. We do like a free discovery call as of this moment. And we want to know what's going on. And we want to figure out if there's ways that we can help you. But we have extensive experience. Each of us came out of long-term toxic marriage. We both have kids. And we managed to find true, healthy love in midlife, which is something we don't really talk about too often with our clients who are dealing with the muck of the court system. But I think that anyone who wants to hear like wonderful stories of hope and that the kids can be okay, we're very happy to talk to them and help lead them and their children to the other side.
Yeah, I love that. I was thinking, I asked you about like privacy. I remember when we met and I was like, well, what is it like on your groups? And you were like, oh, we don't record. People can have their cameras off. And I think that's nice to hear, because when you're working with the court system, it can be super scary to say anything and to put yourself out there, because it feels like anything you say can get back to the courts. And so you have
the digital footprint can. Yes. Social media comments, all that stuff, Facebook groups. There's a lot of danger with Facebook groups too, because you don't know who's lurking in there. And a lot of times abusers go in those groups too, and they mine for information.
Is safe and you keep it like it's not recorded and it's private. And I just think that's such a good thing to know for someone. They're like, oh, I don't have to worry about this getting back into my case.
Yeah. So we have a weekly legal abuse support group, and you have to like plug your email in, you have to register, and we screen all of our clients. We check for stalkers. But yeah, we don't record them. People have their cameras off if they want. They put their cameras on. We know everybody. And at the end of the meeting, it's like, if you want to pull the links from the chat, that's it. And goodbye, we're done.
Yeah, so good. Yeah, because I think people need to know that there's support out there in that process. Like, been there, got out. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're really focused on, that kind of transition period, how to set yourself up for success when you're choosing to leave, how to handle the navigate the legal system. It's so good what you do.
And yeah, we always say it requires a team though, because these are the really tricky, difficult cases.
Yeah.
Well, so thank you for being someone that you know, can certainly be a part of that team, because mm-hmm. the parents in our situation, people in general, need to learn how to self-regulate and, you know, have that emotional vocabulary and bring it out into the world.
Yes. Yes. So anything that anyone learns on this podcast is going to be good for, yes, managing those things, but specifically really dealing with that fear, right? And that rejection and that pain. So if anyone's dealing with that, reach out to Lisa, reach out to me, and we'll help you for sure.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I love this.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Yeah. Okay. Have a good one.
All right. You too.